Welcome to the Persephone program. And I'm really excited today, it's April 12th already, 2023, to have a good friend of mine, a client, a peer, someone that I really respect, Dana Kraft of Resonantia, a medicine woman, par supreme, dealing with all kinds of plant spirit medicine and floral medicine via flower essences and much more. And today we're going to talk about healing in this tower time. We're going to talk about flower essences. We're going to hear a little bit about Dana's healing journey, what she offers as a practitioner, and learn a little bit about how flower essences and other plant allies can help us both in our personal natal astrology and in dealing with difficult transits. So welcome, Dana.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I'm so excited to be here and very honored and thrilled to have this conversation with you and be a little voice box for the plants, as always, whenever I get a chance to speak for them. So thank you.
I love it. The human voice box of the plants. That's perfect, right? Well, so Dana, you and I have been talking for years now, you know, about astrology and your own journey. And, you know, I have used flower essences for a long time, but not as much as I feel that I need them now. Tell me, firstly, how was this journey of becoming who you are now? How did it start, the healing journey, the plant spirits, medicine, all of that? Can you give us a little bit of an idea how that started for you?
Sure. Yes. So I was always, as a young child, really connected to the natural world. So if I cast my mind back, I think the flower essences started working with me when I was very young. And we have a saying in plant spirit medicine that the presence is the medicine. Mm. The medicine is the presence. And so anytime you spend time with flowers, anytime you feel drawn to a certain plant, anytime you feel drawn. So there's always been a presence there in my life that I think I had a deep knowing that there was something happening there. Mm-hmm. And my father was a real gardener and we used to plant daffodils together and he set up a little plot so I would have my own garden. So I always had a relationship with the plants, but then I was, you know, trucking it through growing up on the East Coast of the United States and being a good girl and getting good grades and going and studying and doing all that kind of modern world. And that part of myself was abandoned for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so in 2004, my father became very ill. And when he died, the same week, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And so that is really a crossroads. If people ask me, like, how did I get into natural medicine? It's because those two things happened. Literally, it was the day after he died that I received that diagnosis. And I had already arranged to go to live in the UK and do my master's degree in media studies. And so I sort of wobbled off to London in a haze of grief and confusion and had no context of naturopathy, plant medicine, nothing. But as it happens, the soul guides you to where you need to be when you need to be there. And in London, all the doors just flew open in terms of, oh, you should see this massage therapist and this energy healer and this naturopath. And so I was able to find my own support in that way. And I, in that time, discovered my own true passion with naturopathy. And that gift as a child, that intuitive knowing that I've always had, came together with my professional life. And the Hashimoto's is something I'm sure we'll talk about this along this time, but an autoimmune disease is obviously a hot, and for better or for worse, is a hot topic going on right now, particularly in the United States. Yeah. That there's a lot of options and opportunities there for the plant realm to support us with these types of incarnational, well, all incarnational experiences.
Yeah, wow. I think that Europe, of course, and England especially, is a great home for, you know, still natural medicine. And so it's it's amazing that you know, you kind of discovered it there and found, you know, its helpfulness. And you tell me a little bit about if someone was going to see you, what would you offer them in terms of a consultation, and how would you go about maybe almost like diagnosing what it is that they need and then providing a remedy?
Right. So one-to-ones are my favorite. It's the biggest part of my work. I think there's a wonderful Argentinian flower essence therapist who's based here in Mexico. His name is Eduardo Greco. And he says, the flower essence is cure, but the relationship heals. Yeah. And it gives me real big goosebumps when I say that out loud, because I find that in my work, it's really, I'm similar to what you do, Michelle. It's about creating a relationship of what I call emotional companionship, of really being there, presencing, supporting, and witnessing in a loving and compassionate way, the experiences that people are having. So I'm a trained traditional naturopath from the UK. I'm also a herbalist, and I practice something that I call receptive nutrition, which is about our relationship with food more than food itself. So kind of moving away from the diet culture paradigm. And the flower essences. So the sessions with me are really about deep listening, about helping people listen to themselves, and me listening, one, with my heart and soul, and also with my naturopathic training, to sort of put some pieces of the puzzle together. Because naturopathy, and I include that as the umbrella of all the kind of natural medicines that I use, and the flower essences included, we're always looking for the root cause. Naturopathy treats the person, not the disease. We treat the overall human that we are with all of these different dimensions. And so my job on my end of the listening is to see where all the pieces are coming together. So if we're talking about something like thyroid, well, I'm going to be thinking about throat chakra. I'm going to be thinking about expression. I'm going to be thinking about creativity. I'm going to be thinking about how the throat chakra connects to the womb, for example, how it connects to the heart. We're going to be looking at trauma. We're going to be looking at all of these things, as well as the physical representation. So that's my job in terms of my listening, but also very much a clear and loving mirror, so that people can hear themselves and see themselves and bring conscious awareness to their own journey. And then after session is when I channel the plants. So I consider myself to be a matchmaker between humans and plants. And so that's what I do. After session is my job to find, okay, who's the match of this time? It could be one plant. Sometimes I'll just do one tea. Sometimes I'll do a blend. British herbalism is all about the blends, is getting the perfect formula, maybe between 3 and 6 herbs in a tonic. And then I may put the flower essences separately. So I have a whole process of meditation and listening and maybe some short-term supplementation, but it's also about, my work is not trying to fix something, because I think there's a paradigm around medicine. We're used to going to the doctor, telling them what's wrong, or they tell us what's going on with us, and then they give us something to fix ourselves. And my intention with my work is to open up a sphere of, there's nothing wrong. It may feel difficult, but that there's always an opportunity to support ourselves with whatever our incarnation is bringing to us at this time. And the plants are so loving and so generous in that way.
Wow. They really are. And anyone that's had a reading with me knows that I recommend this medicine in almost every single, when I send out my charts and recommendations, I'm always recommending plant, especially flower essences or tinctures or things like that, because it really works. And, you know, I've had my own experiences with plants that were so profoundly almost metaphysical, you know, in terms of their energy. I mean, everything we know, you know, emphatically, I think now in our scientific materialist paradigm, even with that everything is made of energy, and so are plants, and they have a particular affinity as a support system for humans, which is a whole thing. Definitely making me feel like we definitely need to be stewards of the green world and of you know, Mother Gaia. So tell me right now how you think, let's just talk a little bit about you, if you don't mind, because we have been talking about you, you know, like for years in terms of astrology and things like that. How do you think your own astrology and knowing about that astrology has either guided you or shaped your healing journey, specifically around plants and plant spirit medicine?
Well,
has it deepened it? Do you, I mean, obviously you got into it before maybe necessarily diving into your chart, but there's a connection there. I think you and I have talked about that too.
Absolutely. I think my understanding, well, astrology, and particularly working with you, Michelle, because you're so insightful and your communication is so deep and rich. It's really helped me to understand, even though I don't always capture, I feel like I'm an eternal beginner when it comes to astrology. I don't always really understand the depths of it, but I feel it. So when I have sessions with you, there's a deeper knowing that opens up for me, even though I can't really verbalize it, which sometimes is the best kind of healing. If I can't really talk about it, but I can experience it in my energy body, I know that we're on the right track. And the flower essences have that gift. You don't always really say no, like you're not taking a Valium here. We're not looking for like a before and after, but there's a deep kind of sensitivity. I think astrology, very much like the flower essences, Dr. Bach's assertion was that all disease without exception is a disconnect between the personality and the soul. It's just about alignment. And of course, that alignment doesn't go like that, right? So we think, well, I'm just going to align with my soul and then I'll be aligned. The human experience doesn't really speak to that. As we know, we're talking about spirals and cycles and large cycles. And I think there's nothing more insightful when it comes to cycles than astrology. So in that regard, it's helped me enormously to orient myself as a soul in this body at this time on this journey and understand with your help and anyone who works with astrology, these little glimmers that I get. I think as humans, we don't always understand ourselves as part of a bigger picture. And so in that regard, astrology has helped enormously. And personally, I'm a Libra sun. So that I think is how people see me, as a very light, smiley, you know, I have my toothy grin, you know, I'm a pretty
beautiful
bright
voice. Yeah.
you know, I'm out there just smiling. And that is kind of my nature. Even when I'm having a grumpy day, I'm a smiley person. And there is that part of me. My rising sign is Virgo. And so that part of the healing hand and the grounding, and I really surprise myself. Sometimes I'll literally say, like, activate Virgo. I really got to get myself together. I organize, you know, I'm an autonomous working mom. You know, I've got so much going on. And that Virgo really helps keep me together. And so I appreciate that. And I also recognize actually when Dr. Bach called it the negative states of the archetype and the positive states of the archetype, which we could debate if we want to continue using that kind of dual language. But I certainly, as a Libran with a Gemini moon, it works for me sometimes to see that negative and positive. So the astrology also helps me understand when I'm kind of going in the negative state of the Virgo or the negative state of Libra. And the Gemini moon for me, I met someone recently who has Virgo rising and Gemini moon. And we just laughed. We understood each other so well. It was, we spoke for like an hour. And she was saying, you know, it's the Virgo who goes like, the fork isn't at a 45 degree angle and has to move the fork. And the Gemini that goes like, takes the fork and just throws it in the grass. It's like, who cares about the fork? And so I think that Gemini part for me, I'm a traveler, and my son is also a Gemini moon. And so it's helped me kind of understand those energies and how they run through me. But again, in a way they are running through. And then the biggest part for me of my chart is the five planets in Scorpio. Because as much as I can be seen as the smiley, happy person who has her Virgo life organized and all of that, my inner realms are extremely, extremely deep. And I have been called to transverse the underworlds many, many times. I faced death. There's been a lot of things that I wouldn't have necessarily given myself permission in a way to say, this is part of your life. This is part of your incarnation. And, you know, five planets in Scorpio is not going to always be light and smiley Libra girl.
Absolutely. It's so true. And I was thinking that I definitely see all those different aspects of your personality, you know, the together Virgo healer, the lovely Libra, the beauty and harmony that is within you, the very articulate Gemini moon that sometimes takes you way too many places. But also I think I relate to the most through all that Scorpio, that depth. And the fact that you are on this like really tremendous healing journey of being not, you know, it's, I think that most traditional shaman, most traditional medicine people start with a wound. You know, even in some ancient cultures, you had to either have an experience of woundedness or you were chosen because you were wounded for this deep work. And that so is such a big part of the source of the compassion that you have and the connection that I think that you have with the world and the work that you're doing, which is so important right now. And kind of in keeping with that, one of the things I wanted to talk about with you is that this is we are in a really, really powerful time in the world. We have chosen to incarnate in this time. There's a lot going on. And whether you're, you know, intimately connected to, you know, the struggles that we're all having or not, if you feel that you're protected and you have an easy life or it hasn't touched you, whether it's, you know, war, COVID-19, tremendous polarization, you know, in the Western world, there's so many different things happening. Whether you're connected to it or not, you're still in a this is a time of crisis and trauma. This is what we call tower time after the tower card, you know, where things are changing in really deep ways fundamentally. And many people are stressed out. You were talking about autoimmune and the endocrine systems within the context of many people, especially in the Western world, have been really messed with, I think. And it could certainly be chemicals. It could certainly be a lot of different things. But the point here is, how do we help and heal? And I wanted to talk to you sort of to give my listeners just a little bit of information about how they can use you and use flower essences and tinctures to help their own nervous systems and to connect with the soul in this time.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's such a big conversation. So important.
I know.
It's so important that we're having this conversation, because you said something, I think the other day, like we're on the threshold, and this is the time to be prepared.
Yes, absolutely. This is time to be prepared. Right. Yeah.
And that we can't be. So we have to really be in that paradox, because the prophecies and the wisdom keepers like yourself and the others, the wonderful evolutionary astrologers who see the bigger picture, and we have an idea of what's coming, but we don't really know. And that uncertainty is what I consider to be the most stressful part of most people's lives right now. Is everybody knows something's going down. Everything, maybe. Most of us suspect we're going to be here for it. You know, there was a time where we always felt like one day the system's going to collapse. One day. I should be praying for my descendants. And we're like, no, we're talking about like now-ish. So,
potentially in the next few years. Yeah.
Right. And so that, I think, was a real wake-up call for a lot of us. during the last few years, because suddenly I was like, oh, I will be praying for my descendants and myself and everybody who's here right now. So I'll just say about the Tower card, right? Because the Tower card, you look at that card and it just evokes so much doom. You know, and everyone's like, the Tower, it's coming down, you know, and people want to say, you know, I live in the activism center of Mexico in Oaxaca. And, you know, my entire kind of community and everyone around me, the premise is like, let it burn, let it come down. And there's a certain mentality and a certain nervous system that wants that and is ready for that. And in my 12 years of living in Mexico, I would say this is a huge generalization, but my experience, Mexicans are way more ready for that because there's a different network happening, at least here in Oaxaca, of people who are connected to the earth, people who know how to harvest plants. There's already a system of exchange in place. There's a lot happening where, like, if the Tower card gets as scary as people might say, there are ways in which humans are ready for that on a purely practical level, let's say, right? But if we're going to talk about the deeper realms, for me, the Tower card, I mean, it's like those five planets in Scorpio. I'm like, all right, Tower card for me is about shadow work. It is about shadow work. And it's about healing, because healing, that word is being thrown around like left, right, and center, a hashtag heal, healing, healing. And I think that part of what social media has done is given us this idea that healing looks a certain way. And or if that healing always goes from us feeling bad to feeling better. And that is really not my personal experience. And it's not the experience of the people that I work with. Healing is a disintegration of those patterns that hold us back. It's a coming down of all that is not the soul. And I think the Tower card is that, is like, we want a certain part of our psyche wants to hold up the tower. The tower is the illusion of safety. And so
I'm getting chills right now. Absolutely.
Do you want to jump in and say something else before I continue?
No.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay. So what that means on the inner work is, am I participating in that already right now? That's the part of us that can be prepared for whatever's going to come. What worries me, and I think anyone who's listening, there's a fear for all of us of, but I don't want my walls to come down on purpose. I feel safe in a certain way. I want to keep getting better. I want to keep going in a direction of feeling better. Not that that's not a good thing, clearly. Feeling good is good. But I think the personal as being a mirror for the collective and vice versa, what can we do right now on the threshold is become comfortable with being uncomfortable. Become comfortable with emotional pain. Become comfortable with uncertainty. And find some ways within ourselves to be in right relationship with suffering.
Okay, I'm going to interject a little bit. I think what you're saying also is the development of courage.
Absolutely. There's flowers I want to talk about for that.
Yeah. So a lot of time I've been bringing up this quote by Bruce Lee, do not pray for an easy life, pray for the strength to endure the difficult one, because there are a lot of tools here. You know, this is a difficult time. We have to just acknowledge it. We've all been through a global pandemic. There's a lot of disruption, and it's important somehow within the human life and the human conscious experience, there is this constant cyclical death and rebirth thing happening, both biologically, obviously, in the natural world, our physical bodies, the physical world around us. But it doesn't, but it seems to be more of a metamorphosis, and it's necessary. And if we're building constructs as humans, we need to build constructs that, you know, maybe they don't, maybe they need to be improved. As you know, I live in Las Vegas. They implode entire casinos and rebuild them all the time here. It's that kind of an idea, I think, with the tarot card. But back to you and the flower essence, the development of courage, more than just sort of, sometimes it is endurance. Sometimes it's the endurance of through suffering. We can't deny that. That's been disenfranchised, right? We do suffer. But I always say, don't suffer over your suffering. Mm-hmm. Try and understand that there is this, you were mentioning polarity earlier. There seems to be a form of polarity in human experience. And so to deny that, you know, is really denying the breadth of human experience, because sometimes through endurance and suffering, something really powerful happens, which yes. is strength, courage, all of that. And that you can never take that away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and also another word that comes up as I'm listening to you is transmutation.
Transmutation.
And so I would say, to start out with, we need to stabilize our nervous systems.
Yes.
That's top priority. And I would say anyone living in the modern world, the most Zen person that I might know in the modern world still has a level of nervous system stress due to the collective frequency. Mm-hmm. And just the whole kind of setup of constant nervous system stressors of red lights and social media and the phone and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So stabilizing their nervous system becomes, we're talking about next level. Like, yes, we want to get up in the morning and watch the sunrise. By all means, please do that. It's so important for their circadian rhythms, sleeping well, eating well, all these things. But there's a deeper practice. And I think that's when the herbs just are, they so come into their own around that deep nervous system. Every single person I'm working with is on nervous system tonics in some way or another. I take them myself. And I'd love to list off a few of my favorites in case. Yeah. But I would just ask anyone who is listening to this and taking any allopathic medicines, please do your due diligence and just check out there's not any interactions. Because I'm going to give some ideas, but I can't go into every interaction of every plant, of course. So I'll just put that out. So anyone who wants to take herbs are incredibly safe, but a lot of people are taking a lot of medication right now. So it may be helpful to just keep an eye on that. So some of my favorites, where do I begin? Okay, let's talk about borage. Borage, you say courage, and that's the old British adage, borage for courage. One of my all-time favorite plants. It's a beautiful blue flower.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody wanted to use borage as an essence, is that a Bach essence?
No, it's available in the United States. It's available from FES, Flower Essence Society. They're based in Nevada City. And they have a great online store. So that's a good one. Or you can Etsy. There's lots of cool flower essence people that are selling on Etsy if you want. And
okay. So borage, love it. I'm going to get some today.
Yes. So borage, borage is my gal. She is a beautiful blue 5-petaled, they call her the star flower.
Ooh.
And so as an essence, this could be in everybody's life, this essence, because the borage essence is really about that feeling of discouraged or disheartened or any kind of depression-esque sort of lowness. It's a brightening herb, a gladdening herb, and the essence particularly works on that energetic heart plane of feeling like I don't know how to feel this. I don't know how to stay with this. There's a kind of opening and protective nature. Also, due to that blue color, has a great throat chakra alliance. So it's that heart and throat kind of experience, really important for that courage to be who you are at this time, express who you are, allow the soul to have its voice. Borage is an incredible ally for that. And the essence will work very well on that courage side as well. And as a herb is one of my favorite deep, deep nervous system tonics. So this is one that I recommend to take in the evening for a deep sleep. So yummy.
It could be really good for people, for the Tauruses out there too, that are, you know, experiencing and have been experiencing the eclipses, you know, on their sun. If you have Taurus, sun, moon, rising, Uranus, I would say all the fixed signs, especially Taurus and Scorpio, maybe even also a little bit for Pisces right now, because Saturn has just moved to Pisces. And anything, if you've got in your chart, Saturn aspecting your moon or any of the major planets or the angles in your chart, I think that borage would be great, be really helpful, you know, to provide you with that like little lift. But especially Taurus is, you know, the throat, the neck and the shoulders, you know, I think that that would be wonderful, borage.
Oh, I love that. That's great. That's really good to know. Yeah.
Yeah. What? Okay. So what else?
Okay. So I love ashwagandha.
I take it every day.
Okay. There we go. Ashwagandha. Another, and I can feel myself sort of the plants that are calling right now are just these like really yummy. I think of them as like a pomade for the inner nervous system. You can see them. The ashwagandha is this sort of, in my vision of her, she goes into the nerves and coats them with love and gentleness and softness, comes into the throat chakra. Again, we are talking about throat chakra herbs here. There's a thyroid element to the ashwagandha. And I would say some people find it stimulating. I find it really stimulating. And other people find that it puts them straight to sleep. And so anyone who's listening, you might want to just take it when you can. If you feel tired, you can take a nap. Or if you feel energetic, you can do something with that. So play around a little bit with the ashwagandha. But that particular root, and in India, this is a traditional Ayurvedic herb, also for sexual endurance. This is a great one for the guys. So it's known as something like the herb for the strength of 1,000 horses or something along those lines. So I think ashwagandha, and also easy to grow, so relatively sustainable in compared to other herbs. So I think ashwagandha is a good, what, any alliances with the stars and planets?
Yeah, no, I was thinking it'd be probably very similar to borage, would also be the Taurus Scorpio grouping. You know, you're talking about the connection to sexuality, but it's funny because how I feel is when I take it is I feel just so chill. Like I'm like, it really regulates my nervous system. And which is, you know, as we all know, it's been but yeah, I would definitely say that it would be the fixed signs again, the Leo, the Taurus, the Aquarius, and the Scorpio. That would be useful for them. But I mean, again, both borage and ashwagandha are useful for everything, you know, for everyone. But specifically, the fixed signs have just been having a little bit of a harder time, you know, in the last few years with, you know, Saturn and Aquarius and the Saturn Uranus square of the last several years. We're just kind of separating now. So yeah, that would be my feeling there astrologically.
Cool. So interesting that these are the plants that are coming through. And, you know,
you were just talking about this before we started to record too.
Yeah. I know. And so we have this category in herbal medicine that we call adaptogens. And adaptogens very much do what they say on the label, which is help us to adapt, help us to adapt to stress. And ashwagandha is one of the top favorites right now, I would say. It's gotten a lot of press in the mainstream as well. And another of my favorites, which I suspect will fall into a different category than what we're talking about, is rhodiola rosea, rhodiola root. Now, rhodiola is a very much an endurance plant, because that word has come up as we've been talking. Rhodiola, because of its nature, has a lot to do with the heart. And I would consider it to be the best adaptogen when there is a sluggish depression. So it has a slightly stimulating, slightly hot kind of energy. And this is for people who need a little bit more of a boost in their nervous systems, but it still has that calming, heart-centering kind of effect. So it's a Russian plant. They love it in Russia. So it has, I think that speaks to that heating quality about it and that stamina. And so that is my favorite when the nervous system is kind of, let's say, watery or has lost some tone. So I like the rhodiola for that. And also really helpful for people who wouldn't necessarily call themselves clinically depressed or wouldn't be labeled that, but there's a missing a spark. Like, I want to exercise, but I can't really get it together to do so, but I'm kind of okay, but I'm kind of not 100%. So rhodiola is, I think, a really good kind of counterbalance, very different from ashwagandha.
Yeah, I was thinking that immediately, was thinking about Pisces and, you know, sometimes, you know, some of the other water signs too, but just feeling like they can get it together. You know, if you have a lack of maybe like earth and fire in your chart and you're a lot of water and air and you're kind of stuck in your head and you're stuck in your emotional being, you can't move forward. That would probably be really good. Maybe Leo, you know, Leo has bodily rulership over the heart and the heart center too. If you feel you want and need that stamina, that strength, that willpower, that's good. Yeah. I love those.
Yeah, I do too. And so, wow, there's just so many others that we could go on all day, but I want to talk about the essences as well. But the stabilizing this nervous system, I think, is a very important first place to start, because a lot of times we can come in with the essences, of course, anytime. They're vibrational medicine. They're always going to be supportive, but I find that even the essences work more deeply and there's more awareness of how they're helping when the nervous system is stabilized. So I'll often work on the nervous system first, or if the gut, there's lots and lots of gut problems happening and the nervous system and the gut work, they're completely connected. So sometimes you can just start with some nervous system support and then work on the gut. Maybe oftentimes I'll do both at the same time when the gut and the nervous system are working more smoothly and there's a better absorption of nutrients and people are just generally feeling more stable. Then the essences can go more deeply. And because the essences also move energy. We're talking about the emotional parts of us that are held, if there's repression, if there's denial, fear, trauma, all of these things, the essences, the herbs as well, but the essences have that moving quality. So I often find that it's helpful to stabilize the nervous system first, because then the essences, as they move the emotion, we have more of a capacity to stay with that.
Right. Process. Right. Yeah, of course. That makes a lot of sense. You want to layer, you know, your journey, you know, of development, I guess, you know, healing, development, whatever that is, with some stability, and regulating the nervous system would be first, obviously, then adding in. So, you know, utilizing borage, ashwagandha, and rhodiola.
Rhodiola, those are three great options.
Those three to regulate the nervous system, work on your gut. We're not going to get into that today, but, you know, pre and probiotics, you know, eating really healthily, you know, blah, blah, blah. You can look it up on Google, but do that. And then flower essences. So I got to tell you a story.
Tell me.
My partner, he is a Cancer, but he has Scorpio ascendant and a moon in Gemini. He's got moon and Venus in Gemini. And I've been giving him flower essences and he's taking them and it's really helping him.
Wow.
It's really, really helping him. At first he was like, whatever, but you know, he likes, like sometimes, you know, he utilizes cannabis, you know, occasionally. So, you know, he's been taking it in different ways, but he has really, I really immediately saw, because this is a very emotional person, right? He is a Scorpio ascendant with a sun conjunct Jupiter in Cancer. And he's a very emotional person and sensitive. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to observe how easy it was for him to take the tincture, just drop it under his tongue once a day. And it really improved. I watched him. He was like, what is this? You know, so I would recommend it for sure. But can you like tell our listeners a little bit, like tell us what flower essences really are? We've talked about herbs and how you can use them as tinctures and I think that people understand herbalism, but they don't necessarily understand what a flower essence is. So please.
Sure. So when we talk about flower essences, we're going to be talking about Dr. Edward Bach. But before we do, we have to acknowledge that alchemists throughout time have been working with early morning dewdrops on flowers. And there's always been water as the alchemical basis for so much of what medicine is about. And if you go out after a rainstorm, you know, everybody wants to look at the drops on the leaves and the drops on the flowers. You know, I'm an amateur photographer and I have like thousands of photos of dewdrops and raindrops. You know, there's something about how water, we know, is holding the vibration. So flower essences created by Dr. Bach and then has expanded enormously since his work in the 1920s and 30s is an essence, a flower essence is the capture in water of the flower connected to the elements. So it is such a simple medicine. Dr. Bach said it was the medicine of the future and everybody's talking about flower essences now. He was right. And our future isn't exactly what I think he thought it was gonna look like, but here we are with the medicines anyway. Thank you, Dr. Bach. He's such a wonderful man. And I'll just say quickly, his books are extraordinary. He was a great wisdom keeper and philosopher and beautiful writer. So I recommend all of his books, his collective works. He gave talks all over England and he's a wonderful guy. So the flower essence is spring water in a glass container with the flowers floating on the surface, left in the sunlight on the earth next to the plant for 4 hours. This water is then placed into a container with half brandy and half of the essence that we've created and captured, the water. We strain off the plant. So this doesn't contain any plant matter. It's just the water that was in that sun with the flowers. Preserved in brandy, that's what is called the mother essence. From there, it's put into 100% brandy, and this is what we call the stock essence. And the stock essence is what you buy when you go to the store, you order them online. So we are talking about vibrational medicine, because much like homeopathy, if you took that stock essence to the lab and tried to pull it apart, you're not going to get constituents of a plant like you would in a herbal tincture or herbal capsule. So we're talking about the way in which the flower is gifting us the vibration, and the essence is the way that we receive that gift.
Mm-hmm. And it is kind of like a tea, but it's not steeped. And right. It's really quite interesting how, because I've been using them for years, how they work. They really seem to impart their love and beauty and gift.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so Dr. Bach's work was that he was a keen observer of the archetypes of humanity. He liked to people watch and understand how people behaved. And what his revelation was that these flowers were a vibrational match for these archetypes, if you will, of these kind of types of how the soul plays through. And so we have the 12 original, the 12 first 12 remedies, which is the what we call the constitutional remedies, or the 12 healers. And that's then from there he built up his kit. I won't go into all the details of that because it's a little bit complex, but there are 38 remedies in his kit. And then since then, I mean, there are thousands of essences and practitioners all over the world, like myself, who are creating essences of our own and working with them in a different vibrational way. My essences, I like to align with transits, with the moons. I will play with different vibrations, like chanting mantra into the remedies. There's just a kind of infinite way of dancing with these vibrations. And so the lead on to this is the essence will have its description and its vibrational idea. And you'll see yourself reflected in whether either the negative qualities or the positive qualities, or you see that kind of soul expression that's happening. And the essence vibrationally and its intention is to meet you where you are and allow the vibration to move. And I like to use that word movement instead of uplifting or raising your vibe, or there's something around, yes, we want that kind of effect, but also just allowing the movement to move in the direction that we need to move. That it isn't always, again, we're back to the tower. It isn't always, I feel bad and now I feel good. Sometimes it's about deepening. Sometimes it's about opening. Sometimes it's about crying my face off or releasing anger. It's all of those things. And the essences are so wise and so gentle and so loving. They'll never take you somewhere you're not ready to go.
Yeah. So that's why they're traditionally used for emotional support, because of course emotions or feelings, we do need them to flow. They really are and have always been associated in metaphysics with water, you know, because they're meant to flow. We're supposed to experience the cyclical ups and downs and flowing energies of our emotional body. And so then that makes a lot of sense that the flower essences support that flow, not just a movement from one state to another, from like bad to good, but just like to get it out. And sometimes, like you said, it will take you somewhere deeper. Maybe you need to cry your face out, but that always makes us feel better, doesn't it?
Yes. And then, and that's why it's good to have the nervous system stabilized.
Yeah.
When that happens. And, right. And we'll also see that within the flower essence formulas is there's always a stabilization part. The formulation, I usually put five essences, sometimes six or seven into my formulas. And there's a very specific way that we place these essences together. So there's a synergy and a support there. And we were speaking to Rescue Remedy before we came on today. And Rescue Remedy is when anyone listening, you want to have your rescue remedy in your hand, in your car, in your bag, in your bathroom, in your nightstand.
Yeah, you know, it's like you need to have this, like with basic aspirin and rescue remedy, some essential oils, like it's kind of like always have it. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, rescue remedy is what Dr. Buck called the five flower formula. And it very much is for acute states. And I don't know, but I don't think Dr. Bach imagined, perhaps he did, that we would be needing so much rescue remedy 100 years later in terms of what is going on with our nervous systems right now. It's a beautiful remedy to have to hand. And I often will place it in the formulas along with other essences as a one of the five, because it has that stabilizing influence on the nervous system and really holds in the body. A lot of a rescue remedy is about staying in the body, because part of what we're seeing a lot of right now is dissociation.
Mm, absolutely. You know, you brought up certainty versus uncertainty, a big theme coming up for me with my clients, that real fear over uncertainty, the desire to keep that certainty and it being ripped away, you know, by the cosmos. That is a huge thing. And also in how people are dealing with it, how they're coping is through disassociation. That has also come up a lot for me too. So I think it's really interesting that you bring that up. And so Rescue Remedy can help you with that too.
Rescue Remedy is fantastic for that. Mm-hmm. And particularly in that remedy is a flower essence called clematis. And clematis is very much about coming into the body. The negative state is this really spaced out, kind of dreamy, off in another world. And I would also say with that mental dissociation of people really living in a different kind of mental paradigm, that they're not really here. And particularly in that kind of trauma response or fear of any kind, when we pop out, the Rescue Remedy is great. The clematis on its own is also really helpful with that. There's also, I've been working with an essence recently, which is a gem essence. It's a diamond gem essence. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a really, really cool remedy for coming into the body. It's bringing that diamond light through the whole light body. And I think the rainbow body, all the different bodies that we have, I think that's also a fantastic remedy. And Aspen from the Bach collection is about uncertainty. It's really about that unknown, fear of the unknown. And also that Aspen has that fear of the unknown with a kind of paranoid, something bad is gonna happen. And so if we come back to this uncertainty and tower, yeah.
That's what I got for my partner and Willow too, I think. I think it's right here, somewhere around here. I love all that. Wow. So I know that we had talked earlier about some of the Bach suggestions for the moon signs. And yeah. I thought that would be fun to kind of go through that a little bit so that our listeners can obviously go on their own journey of learning more about flower essences and utilizing these really powerful tools to regulate their nervous system and to allow their emotions to flow and to be embodied and be strong during this difficult time. But then there's some fun sort of remediation work that I think that flower essences and other tinctures, but like you said, this is such a huge conversation. We could talk forever. But I'd love to talk a little bit about that, you know, so that our listeners can look at their own astrology and say like, hey, what's my moon sign? And the moon associated with emotions and our instinctual innate cells, like how we respond emotionally, how we feel without thought, you know, that is very much connected to what flower essences are all about. Mm-hmm. So, could you give our listeners some recommendations based on their moon sign?
Yeah.
And then we can also talk about whether we agree.
Although yeah, exactly.
Dr. Bach is the expert.
If Michelle agrees with these assertions or see what you might add to these. So there are 12, so I won't go too deep into all of them, but I'll give a little couple of lines about them and then you can do the same. See what you think. And I'll just say that there is a debate about whether this is supposed to be matching your sun sign or your moon sign. I'm camp moon. I think that if I look at this list, I resonate with that. So we'll see. I'll put it out there for everybody to just see. Yeah. And you can check both. Maybe it's both for
try
you.
It. Know. Yeah. Yeah.
Try it. Okay. So it starts with Aries as impatience. Now, impatience very much is what it says on the label. It is about patience, but impatience for me is a remedy about our relationship with time. It's about our rhythms. It's about how we move through the world. It is about patience in the way that being impatient is really about control. And being patient is really about being aligned with a divine right timing, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's the area.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, I think that could be something that people could work with coming up with the solar eclipse in Aries at 29 degrees, which is happening April 20th, 21st, that maybe you want to work with the eclipse energetically and maybe you use impatience for that. I mean, I certainly can see that correlation between the very impatient, you know, charge fire sign of Aries.
I love that.
I know. I mean, I'm not an expert in flower essences and you are. So I think that
I love
that makes sense.
Okay, perfect. So we're going to give a check mark. We agree with Dr. Bach. we'll agree with that. Okay, so for Taurus, it came up with gentian. So gentian is about feeling discouraged after setbacks. Mm-hmm. This is the essence for try again, that I've tried so hard and things aren't really changing and I'm feeling discouraged. That's really the key word for the gentian, is how to kind of move that forward.
That makes a lot of sense for Taurus. You know, Taurus does not, and it's a fixed sign. You know, it's very much about stability and security. So anything that can break up that energetically, I like that. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a great remedy. I actually just gave it this one to my Taurus son, and I found that he responded immediately to this essence. So, okay, we'll say yes, but he's a son. That's his son. He's a Gemini moon.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could use it for sun, moon, or even ascendant, you know, because you're trying to use it effectively to create a form of change, you know? So
we're talking about the archetypes here, right? We're talking about the vibration field. So if you relate to the Taurus, if something's going on Taurus, so let's just put it out there that way. I think that really makes sense if we're talking about the energies here.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. The Gemini is Serrato. Serrato is a remedy that is all about inner listening. This is our remedy for intuition. And I find that Serrato is coming up a lot lately because of this dissociation we're talking about. People are very disconnected with their intuition or doubtful about their intuition. So Serrato is an incredible remedy, beautiful blue flower, and really helps to come into the intuitive space, intuitive knowing. So that's the Gemini that came up.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, part of some of the difficulty of having that like super hyper mercurial Gemini self is constant thought and activity. And so that gentle listening and that quietude that can provide sounds great.
Okay. Yeah. I love that remedy. And for Cancer came up Clematis, the one we're talking about a little while ago, about coming in down into the body, that dreamy, dissociated kind of fantasy world. The Clematis really helps anchor into the body.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I can see that. You know, I think that the Cancers often become quite internalized, and that they of course are, you know, sensitive and emotional, but that it isn't, they're internalized, I think emotionally and sometimes mentally, and maybe that can be something that isn't necessarily in fit feeling in their body. So, you know, I like it.
Okay. So Leo is vervain. Now, vervain was the first remedy that I was ever prescribed. And like a good vervain, I was so shocked, because we don't often know ourselves that well in the vervain state. The vervain is all about being very enthusiastic that everyone should be agreeing with me. I know the way forward, everyone. I know how to get through the tower. Everyone follow me and you'll all be okay. We see a lot of this happening right now, because I also think the vervain is a fear response to, there's a dogmatic side to the vervain that can be our downfall and I kind of know it all, but it's really comes from a place of love. It's an overenthusiasm. There's a leadership quality to the vervain when they're really in the highest frequency of, there's a path, a light holder, but not trying to get everybody come on over to their side. And incidentally, vervain is another one of my favorite nervous system tonics as a herb. So we could go on and on about vervain.
That description of vervain sounds to me like a description of Leo. You know, I think it's definitely focusing on Leo, because Leo is the king or the queen, but it has to be that heart-centered service. Being another fixed sign, super dogmatic, that's shadow side of Leo. I know it all, super judgmental. I don't know about that. I think it's just perpetuating the qualities of Leo, which I guess could be good for a negative or depressed Leo, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And here where I live in the mountains, July and August is her moment. There's vervain everywhere. So I'm gonna go with that. Yeah. So Virgo is a Centauri, and Centauri is very much about speaking your truth, putting your boundaries, not letting people walk all over you. Century is about your own inner guidance and your own inner wisdom.
You know, Virgo is the opposition of Pisces. And I'm always telling folks that have a lot of that in their chart, you know, to sometimes to offset the boundarylessness of Pisces, to like pull in that Virgo-ness. You were talking about that earlier with your Virgo ascendant. Like, I'm going to channel, you know, my inner school marm. Virgo's so very composed in its best self. It really is this unit, you know, that I think can function on its own, why it's been connected with the virgin goddesses, you know, these, you know, pure unto itself. Mm. So what do you think of that essence?
Yeah, it's so funny. Even as I was writing down the list, I didn't even twig that one. It's like there's something going on with me in Century where I will go around and like, I don't know what essences I have to take. I'm so stuck. And the Century is like waving at me from my cabinet. And I'm like, I wish anyone was here to help me. There's something about like, it's a blind spot for me. And so maybe that has to do with the Virgo rising, because it is very much what you're saying is absolutely aligned with a lot of my life experience, for sure.
That connects with Virgo in the sixth house as being sort of like modest and unassuming, but also like incredibly together and powerful. Interesting.
I'm gonna keep percolating that one. So the Libra, poor Librans, we're always just, oh, poor Librans, they're so indecisive, you know? And so the remedy is Sclerianthus. Sclerianthus is a wonderful remedy for making a decision, but between two things. This very much is a Libran. I couldn't be more Libran. So I'm always like, oh, can't they give us a different one? You know, is there anything about us that isn't just about decision, but we are the scales, right? The two.
Love it. I gonna get some. I've got Mars and Libra.
There you go. Yeah, I'm excited to see if anyone takes everything to hear back.
Yes, we would love to hear from you if you take some of these remedies. You can either contact me at Persephone Program or michelle.prentice@gmail.com. And we're also at the end of the show, we're going to give you all of Dana's information.
Yeah. I really want to hear from everybody about this, because this is such a cool medium, but it also is great to hear back later what people resonate with, you know, after they listen. Yeah. So Scorpio, we've got chicory. Poor Scorpios again. I'm bringing in Willow. You mentioned Willow earlier. Willow is all about the victim consciousness. Willow is all about the personal responsibility. And so I feel that sometimes, like everyone, we feel sorry for ourselves of how our shadow patterns play out. You know, so when I saw the chicory, I was like, oh, you know, the chicory is all about being possessive and needy, which is a questionable word. But that is that kind of chicory of needing other people, being a little bit too over-involved in people sometimes. That depth of need, I guess, the chicory, when releasing that and finding a different kind of relationship with your own emotional health.
And that is just, it can't be more perfect for Scorpio, really, to help with that intensity, that possessiveness. You know, you could use that for a Venus, like a Venus in Scorpio too, where you're just constantly reading between the lines, you know, in your relationship, you know, and investigating everything and like possessive and trying to control. I think that would be really good.
Yeah, that's a great remedy. Okay, so Sagittarius, Agrimony. Now, Grimini was one I was pretty sure was going to come up in our conversation today in some way or another, because there's a lot of this going on in the wellness industry. Grimini is about my smiling face and being the perfect, nice, happy girl, but inside there is deep anguish. Mm-hmm. Deep. So Grimini is one that has been coming up a lot in relation to the collective for me, because I keep kind of saying, is this an authentic expression that we're looking at? And that whole social media, putting your best face forward and the filters and then this and that and the other. But at the same time, it has the agrimony isn't just putting on a happy face. It's also hiding. It's a cheerfulness that hides a deeper anguish. And there's a highly addictive quality to the agrimonies because they have to take something to keep up that facade. So that's what came up for Sagittarius.
Interesting. That is really interesting. Maybe superficially being kind of, you know, on the surface, too jovial, overenthusiastic or jubilant, but it's almost kind of like a coping mechanism, whereas you're not really being real. So that's really super interesting. Yeah.
Is that a Sagittarius? Would you say that is a Sagittarius trait?
I think so. Yeah. Kind of more, you know, being overenthusiastic without, you know, any real foundational sense of that. It's just, it's a natural tendency, you know, and also excessive, right? And it could be excessive, you know, partying. It could be, you know, excessive, you know, pleasure seeking.
Yeah. My best friend from childhood is a Sagittarius and she's always been like my most fun party girl, but it's definitely, there's an undercurrent sometimes. Sagittarius.
Yeah. Interesting. That would, I think it would be a healthy thing to take.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say agrimony for any of us who are choosing to participate in the social media and feeling like that comes up, there's a lot of, that's a whole other podcast for sure, is what's playing out in the social media. How is this all going to play out in terms of when the tower comes down? You know, we are all putting a certain image out into the world, and the tower experience requires an authenticity and a vulnerability. And I say that as a Scorpio, that kind of authentic, well, the deep stuff, what's the goopy? I want to see the real goop. Yeah.
We need to, you know, one of the things that's happening right now, I think like in social media is that people are saying, you know, that you can't express, you know, yourself like truly authentically, but also what's happening is that when the shadow is released, you know, into the collective consciousness, whether it is the shadow that's always been there, you know, which is violence, whatever, shameless bigotry, you know, racism, xenophobia, misogyny, blah, 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 blah. You go on to it, on and on and on, right? Hatred, evil, blah, blah, blah. A lot of people are, it's coming out in there and people are saying like, oh, you can't do this. Like, this is like too much. But we don't become enlightened by imagining figures of light. We do by making our own darkness conscious, because it's a part, as you, like you were mentioning, like this is part of our human experience. Is the tower is part of it. The tower is part of the human experience. You know, having things fall apart, we can put them back together consciously. But I was also thinking about from Agrimony was the song Tears of a Clown. I don't know, it came to me, you know, Smokey Robinson, of just like the whole idea of, you know, I'm crying on the inside, but I have to look good, you know.
100%.
Or I have to be nice. I have to be like, hey, you guys, like, I'm, you know, it's my TikTok video about, you know, the fact that another like 30 or 40 people like died today, but you know, like, let's focus on positive.
Totally. And you know, I think that the age of Aquarius is the age of transparency. So
for sure.
You know, a lot of many people right now are working double time and they have double anguish because they know that they're being seen through. We really can't hide. And I think this is an important part of the tower is, what do we think we're hiding from? Who are we hiding from? Who is the me that I'm hiding from? I mean, all of these things are really tower topics for me, because if my shadow is your shadow, the collective, who are we really hiding from? It's not for anyone's highest good.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. And, you know, we need to tear down the structures that are not sustainable anymore, no matter what. No matter what. This is a liberating card too, the tower. It's the bolt of lightning. You know, it's just sometimes we need that, you know, scorched earth. Like, let's do it.
Okay. 100%. And also this whole idea about what needs to come down is outside of us. There is no outside that isn't inside.
Oof, totally.
So that is a real deep truth that we all need to keep holding, because it's like, well, let's smash the patriarchy and then I'm going to feel better. No, your patriarchy is inside of you too. It's the ocean we're all swimming in. We're all in this. Everybody's in this. And so that's both terrifying and liberating, I find.
Absolutely. I think it's the deeply liberating, because human beings, more than anything else, need to feel connected. They need to feel, they are connected. But we need to know that we are somehow in many different ways. And I think that for the most part, you know, our technology and social media and the internet and all of that, as difficult as it is, and it is, and there's a lot of really, really rough aspects to it. There's also this, you know, there's beautiful, amazing connectivity. And I think that's really helpful.
I agree.
The transformation, the information that is readily available to everyone, it blows my mind.
I know. I was saying that to my son. I'm like, so when I was a kid, if I wanted to know about whales, I would have to start at the encyclopedia, then go to the library, and now I've just got it right here. What do you want to know?
And you were lucky. I mean, we had a freaking Junior Britannica encyclopedia that our mom had bought for us, brothers and I, and it was like the only way that you. Like, yes, and you could go to the library and they have one too, you know, or you could find a book. You have to ask a librarian, I want to know about gray whales. And, this is a whole freaking thing. And now you're like, you know, or you'd have to like call the record store to find out like what song was in your head, you know.
It's amazing. Like, I have a real nostalgia problem. I'm like, take me to the library. I know that's probably in my astrology chart, but I have a mythology around those days, those pre-internet days. But it is incredible at the same time what we have at our fingertips. And I think these generations who grew up with the internet their whole lives, if you know how to use the internet to your benefit and you don't just get sucked down a wormhole of something scary or bad or whatever we want to call it. If you know how to use the internet to know about whales, man, that is just the coolest opportunity.
Totally. It really is. And you can see video. Oh my gosh. Yeah. All right. Capricorn.
Okay. Capricorn. So Capricorn is Mimulus. Mimulus is our essence all around fear of the known. So this is about, I have to give a podcast and I'm nervous. I have to get on a plane, right? So these are the fears that we know about, not the unconscious ones, the conscious ones. I know what I'm scared of in this moment. And that's the Mimulus remedy.
Ooh, okay. And I'm also connecting that the known with also responsibilities. Like I have to get on a plane. I have to go into work tomorrow. I have sometimes Capricorn get overwhelmed with what they consider to be all of the responsibilities that they must, you know, handle. So that makes a lot of sense. I know that when I used to work in the corporate world, I would have horrible depression on Sundays. Just, I would be depressed. Like Sunday was just like, oh my God, the gloomies, you know, oh, I gotta work tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That would have been good for that.
Yeah. I love that. That's so interesting. I'm learning a lot right now. Thank you. So then we have Aquarius, is water violet. So water violet is, it's interesting, right? It's Aquarius that, well, you can speak to that, but there's this watery, if you think about an aquatic plant kind of off on her own, there's an isolation element. There's an aloofness about the water violet. This comes up for me in the system I work with called the Gene Keys, because I have a lot of this energy in that system of this kind of retreat of wanting to sort of be on my own. It's not so much hermit really, but it's there's a soft aloofness to it. So this water violet helps us to kind of be part of the circle, be part of the conversation. And there's a vulnerability part to what we're speaking to as well with the water violet essence.
Yeah, I mean, that just makes so much sense with Aquarius is both, you know, one of the things my mom used to always say, like aloof Aquarius, she had a moon in Aquarius herself.
There you go.
And there is this airy kind of sense of space between that archetypal energy and others. But yet also, of course, Aquarius rules the group. It rules in, you know, a body of water. can, you know, can also be associated with a, with it, any kind of body, right? Like a group, and that connection of your unique specialness connecting to the whole, that sounds perfect for Aquarius, just to kind of deal with their own sense of self, right? Yeah. Does it for you too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's an, you know, it's a remedy that doesn't come up that often, because I find that people who run that energy don't come for a lot of sessions. So
they want a whole bunch to do. They're like, nope.
Yeah. So I recently, a woman I've been working with for, gosh, years, maybe 10 years, she kind of came through a breakthrough of understanding this part of her own archetype. And I gave her just this remedy, nothing else. And she had a big breakthrough in terms of her personal relationships. It's very rare for me to give one flower essence. I might give one herb, but it's rare that I'll give one flower essence. But she was so right there with this essence, and it made a big difference for her. So it's a great remedy.
Wow. Oof, I can't wait to hear what people say when they
talk. I know. Okay, right. Last on our list, we've got Pisces and the rock rose. So rock rose is our remedy for panic and terror. Is one of the remedies in the five flower rescue remedy, and is around that. It's a courage remedy for sure, but it's about those deeper terrors. It's not like the mimulus where it's fear of getting on a plane. This is a deep terror, night terrors, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the existential dread that accompanies that sort of openness of the Pisces psyche to all that is, you know, because part of all that is very much about uncertainty and mystery. And so oftentimes Piscean people or people with a lot of Pisces do experience a lot of fear, you know, and if you have Saturn in Pisces as well, you know, Saturn is very much associated with a lot of that. So you're having your Saturn return right now. There's, you know, if you're feeling fear of the unknown or that deep fear, you know, that just accompanies honestly, like being a conscious human right now, that might be really good. Rock rose.
Yeah. Rock rose is an amazing.
Wow. This has been so freaking cool, Dana. I could talk to you forever. But I think that we've already spoken for a little about almost 90 minutes.
Oh, really? Wow. I didn't even realize it went so fast. Yes. Well, chapter one.
Chapter one. I know we need to do more. We need to do more. We definitely want to hear from listeners. What would you like more? How can we, in our capacity, support you? Because that's what we do.
Right.
But tell them, is there anything that you want to add to this conversation that I think that we've like pulled in so many wonderful elements to supporting people in this time, but were there any like parting ideas or thoughts or comments?
Mm-hmm. You're not alone. We are so well accompanied by the plant realm. It's very hard for me to express even without crying of like the depths of love that the plants have for us. They are our ancestors, and that's not a metaphor. I mean, they are our wisdom keepers. They are the sacred witnesses of everything that has happened on this planet. They will be here, in my opinion, when the Homo sapiens are gone and the new humans are here, or they are the highest, most loving, unbelievable. And so whatever is going on in your life, there's support for you. And there are many of us who are working with this. We're here to help you. And just look around you, go for a walk, and the plant that shouts to you, stand next to that plant and let the medicine be the presence. Those are my words.
That is so beautiful. I completely agree. I'm not sure what it was today, but I took a walk with my dog and it was the most beautiful. It's a desert blooming bush with just sprays of the most beautiful yellow flowers. And it was medicine for my soul. Spend time in nature, commune with plants. They, you know, you meditate, especially with, for some reason, you know, we can get into this later, but flowers are especially have just this ebullient, joyous, giving, loving nature. It's insane energetically. I've experienced it. They are here to help us. And therefore, when you have that experience with them too, it's reciprocal, you know, and then you begin to want to help them and really like nourish and nurture them as well. And that is this wonderful, healthy, interdependent connection that we have. So the medicine is there. You are not alone. Dana, how can people find you and book a session with you?
Yes. So thank you. My website is resonantia.mx. And Instagram is the same, ResonantiaMX. And so you can catch me there. You can email me, send me a WhatsApp, come and visit me in Mexico. I'm available for sessions and I teach workshops. So I'm very excited to connect with anyone who feels called to connect.
Amazing. I will definitely link all your information in the notes. Definitely do book a session with Dana. If you feel called for some plant medicine and you know, it's going to be helpful for you, for any problems. You know, there's a lot of different ways to work on yourself, and working on yourself intellectually, sometimes it's just, it's not the, you know, it doesn't do everything. Sorry, but it just doesn't. So being your best self, exploring your psyche, and connecting with these beautiful allies and tools on all the different healers is the way to go right now in this time of great uncertainty and great promise, where we need to be, you know, ably, I guess, armored to a certain extent, or have these tools with us. We need to be empowered is what we need to be in this time more than anything else, empowered in this tower time, so that we know how to deal with it, endure it, and potentially improve it, and that we can be there for ourselves and for our loved ones and live our best life. So I got to thank you, Dana. You are amazing. I learned so much. I loved it. I hope that you'll be on again.
Yes. Thank you so much, Michelle. This was such a great honor and so much fun to talk to you anytime. So thank you. Thank you.
All right. Big hugs. Thank you. And to be continued.
Okay.
Bye. Bye.